This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Charles Chestnut wrote with powerful clarity about the lives of African Americans, all the while imagining a world where race would become irrelevant. He challenged ideas of racial identity as they emerged in the late 19th century in the United States. Chestnut worked and taught in Fayetteville and wrote volumes throughout his life. He was the first African American fiction writer to be published in the Atlantic Monthly. But for much of the 20th century, Chestnut's work was forgotten. A recent resurgence of academic interest in Charles Chestnut has brought him back into fashion. As part of our occasional series, North Carolina Literary Lights, we're taking a look at Charles Chestnut's legacy. With me in the studio is Dante James. He's a filmmaker and instructor at Duke's Center for Documentary Studies, and he teaches in Duke's African and African American Studies program. His short feature film, The Doll, is based on a Charles Chestnut story. Dante, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me from Boston is Gene Gorman. He's a PhD candidate in English at Boston College and a 1993 graduate of Duke, and he's written and taught about Chestnut's work and life. Gene, welcome.
Thank you so much, Frank.
I want to start with you and ask you, Gene, what is it about Charles Chestnut that makes him so unique for his time?
I mean, I think it's because of the way he insinuated himself into so many different areas of the culture and history at a time when there was so much going on related to racial formation and racial definition. He just found his way not just into the literary world, but also into all kinds of conversations with other thinkers and intellectuals. And I think what also makes him really intriguing is what you alluded to earlier, is that to some extent his work is kind of lost to sort of bigger name African-American intellectuals and artists.
How did Chestnut challenge ideas of Southern progressivism in the South at the end of the 19th century?
Well, I think what he did was he parsed the fact that, progressivism at that point in the South was thought of as an economic term. How does the South rebuild, post-political reconstruction? How does it actually reconstruct under a new model that's kind of being forced on it by the North, an industrial model and a modernizing kind of model? And what Chestnut is saying is, you know what, that is one form of progressivism, but there's also social progressivism, and he's pointing out that this Negro problem, as it was called at the time, is really going to undermine progress in general, including economic progress, and have some really, really dangerous and potentially violent outcomes.
And that was not so obvious in the time he wrote, as you suggest, Gene. It was a complicated and difficult time, hard for anybody to see where this was going. Dante, your short film, The Doll, is based on a Charles Chestnut story. What drew you to that work?
Well, I was interested in Chestnut in the context of the fact that his work does have this interdisciplinary approach to it in terms of addressing issues during that particular time period. He addressed, obviously, issues of race, identity, politics, and that was really intriguing to me. And the idea that he was able to do it and have his work published in the mainstream white press was even more intriguing to me, because as an independent filmmaker in contemporary society, I have my own challenges in terms of finding the appropriate balance in terms of my growth and evolution as an artist, but also finding the appropriate outlets for my work. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what it was like for Chestnut to have to navigate that terrain back around the turn of the century.
Not only go ahead, Gene.
Oh, and I was going to say, Dante's alluding to this kind of interdisciplinary nature of Chestnut. Preparation for this show actually sent me back to reading The Doll, and if you don't know your political history around the time that this stuff is happening, you can't appreciate the kind of allusions that Chestnut's making. I mean, just as one small example, toward the end of The Doll, which I know we'll get into in a minute, there's a reference to how this black barber is better suited as a barber than a postmaster. It's a direct reference to federal appointments from the McKinley administration, and that's the kind of work that Chestnut we can do when we study chestnut is we can start moving around genres and, you know, different kinds of academic discourses,
right,
and ways of thinking.
Yeah. Political and social discourse as well. Well, we should talk now about the doll. Tell us about, give us the plot summary.
Well, it's a story, I think it was first published in 1904, and many chestnut scholars think that the actual location for the story is Cincinnati, which is about as far south as you can go in the north without being in the south. And it's the story of a African-American who has a barber shop. He is a single father, and this barber shop is a place of pride for himself and for the African-American community and the barbers that he employs. One day, his daughter asked him to repair a doll that she has, and he leaves and says, yes, I'll see if I can get to it. He goes to the barber shop. There's a convention in town that particular day, a political convention, and many people from the South have come up for that political convention, and as it evolves, one of the people attending the convention has a connection to the Chestnut family from many years past.
And a colonel then goes in to get a haircut.
Yes.
And he starts talking about, he's a Southern colonel and he's there in Cincinnati, and he's saying, and he's giving advice to people about how they should treat their Negroes. Let's listen.
You pamper your Negroes. You allow them to take liberties. You have to keep the Negro in his place. And his place is defined by nature. In the South, he knows this and gives us no trouble.
Due respect, Colonel. But if only that were true.
But what I say is the truth. Now, I will prove what I say.
And there's a short clip from the film The Doll, taken from the Charles Chestnut story of the same name, film produced by Dante James, a filmmaker at Duke Center for Documentary Studies. And we're talking about Charles Chestnut today. That story evolves. It goes on, and it becomes pretty serious as the colonel continues the story. Tell us what happens.
Well, in terms of the colonel proving his point, the colonel and the judge, who is hosting him, go to our main character's barbershop, and they both ask to be serviced. During the time that the colonel is in the chair, he tells the story of an incident 20 years ago when he actually killed a black man, and the barber who's actually servicing the colonel, he's actually shaving him, is aware of the story too, because the black man that the colonel killed is actually the father of the barber. So the barber is in a position where he has to make a decision. He has an opportunity to exact revenge, and he has to make that decision at that crucial moment.
Let's go to the spoiler. Can we? We're going to do this. This is the cinematic, the climactic scene of the film. Tom the Barber has a razor in his hand. He has just heard the colonel boast of this killing. This murder is how we keep people in their place. But then he looks over and he sees the doll that his daughter Daisy handed him that morning.
Daisy. Of all days, today she gives me the doll. I needed that reminder. My father died in defense of his daughter. I must live to protect my own.
There's a story that was written almost 100 years ago. Dante, you did a film 100 years later. Why? What did you see that resonates today?
Well, there were a number of themes, and this is true, I think, throughout all of Chestnut's work, which I think also is having a large impact on the renewed interest in Chestnut. But at the time, I was looking for a film to produce. All across the country, there were these horrible situations of violence among young African Americans, where young African Americans might have lost their lives or been injured or over a pair of Air Jordan tennis shoes. And I was really bothered by that. And thematically, this film and this story speaks to the idea of just stopping and thinking and being responsible in terms of the repercussions of your actions and your responsibility to family and community and the people that you love, and the idea that once you commit an act of violence, you know, it affects many other people beyond just the people involved in the particular act.
Right. Gene Gorman, how do you think Chestnut's decision in The Doll to have the hero Tom turn away from violence represent the larger theme, both in his personal life and in his work?
Well, I think Dante's hit upon it is just the concern at that moment, the possibility that violence is simply going to beget more violence. You know, Chestnut, outside of his literary work, is also really active in the early days of the NAACP and trying to, you know, find a way that's not a militancy, you know, a way that is somewhere between accommodationism and advancement of colored people at the time, that can stem the tide of what is consistently being called race riots, and the implications being that, you know, a lot of the violence is coming out of 1906 events in Atlanta, Springfield riots, the red summer of 1919, and a lot of these race-based violent events are really, what's happening is really that blacks are getting blamed for this violence, even though in most instances, historically, what we're finding is that they're not the ones that are causing the violence. Right. And so for Chestnut, there's a real concern that the presence of any violence is going to lead to the implication that it is blacks who are causing that violence. And that just results in the continual marginalization of his people as a group.
And that, not to mention Wilmington in 1898. The other thing that he noticed was the systemic nature of it. And I think that may be the brilliance and some of the things that you all point out in his work, that he recognized that industrial capitalism relied on the breach, on the conflict between black and white, that this had to be promoted in order for industrial capitalism to advance, that it was not a kind of interpersonal problem, that it was not a historic problem because black people and white people somehow didn't get along. The systemic and economic nature of this was something that Chestnut pointed out very, very early.
Well, yeah, and what he also knew, again, politically, you know, you alluded to 1898 Wilmington, which is the impetus for his novel The Mayor of Tradition, which comes out in 1901. What he also noted was, it's very easy to drive a wedge between poor whites and all blacks of the time, who in North Carolina in the late 19th century, basically from 1894, 1895 to 1901, there's this political moment of fusion politics where people are starting to realize that if they put whites and blacks are realizing that they can start dealing with their actual economic and educational interests and their progressive interests. And that's a real threat to white elites and white supremacists. And but as long as the fires of white supremacy can continue to get stoked, that wedge can get driven in. And Chestnut is right there on it. I mean, even in his own personal identity, I mean, he refers to himself as a white Negro and has this sort of vexed personal identity. I mean, there's stories in his journal of where he very easily could have passed for white and found himself in encounters with immigrants who thought he was white. And he chose to self-identify and to do his, you know, take the subject position of someone who was non-white and of mixed race at a time when having, you know, one drop of black blood led to the loss of your own position of privilege as a white person in this country.
And he was born in Ohio, but then spent a lot of his life working in Fayetteville.
Right. He moves to Fayetteville, which in his stories he refers to as Patesville. And it's actually my hometown as well. And so he moves to Fayetteville when he's about 9 or 10, and he's in North Carolina until he's about 25. And during that time, he's a teacher, first a student and then a teacher. And he returns to Ohio. He's accepted to the bar, and runs a successful court stenography business. But he's, despite his 50 stories and his three novels at the time and all his other writing, he just couldn't make a career out of it. I was looking at the numbers, and Mirror of Tradition sold like 3,200 copies in 1901. And so, yeah.
Well, and that's a point I think we can make about Chestnut's work, can't we? That while he was brilliant as an intellectual and as a social and political critic, it's hard to read. It's hard work to read, isn't it? Especially for contemporary audiences today, or readers.
Yeah, well, I mean, he does a lot, and I joke. I mean, I was giving a lecture a couple weeks ago about the Mirror of Tradition and the historical antecedents for it and the historical context for it to an American Studies class here at BC, and I said to them, I was like, it's okay, raise your hand if you didn't like this novel, and they can all begrudgingly as undergraduates or even as graduate students, you're like, as literature, how good is this literature? Even looking at the Doll, I mean, he does a lot of work with stock characters. I mean, the story that's embedded in here in the Doll is also embedded in the Mirror of Tradition. So he's moving around all these little modules. So the creative juices, if you will, don't necessarily flow through. But he also creates these really complicated plots and a lot of intertwined plots. And I think in many ways, as a literary critic, I think what we see there is that the complication of the way he constructs narrative is itself representative of the complicated nature of constructing race and defining race. And, there is no beginning, middle, and end, and no final say on how people are able to identify, even now, right? I mean, there's how people identify with various groups.
Dante?
I think you are absolutely correct in that his stories, all of them, have this complexity to them in terms of the idea of rehabilitating the South through industrial capitalism. That's a theme that he explores in his book, The Colonel's Dream. Mm-hmm, he wanted to use the main character as someone who had went north and attained wealth, and he wanted to come back to Fayetteville and use that wealth as a means to deconstruct some of the racial and economic barriers that were prevalent within that particular town. In terms of the complexity as it relates to the Doll, one of the things that we were challenged with was the idea of maintaining the integrity of his work, but yet also realizing that we were writing and producing this film for a different audience. Mm-hmm. It's a documented fact that Chestnut was not writing for the black population. Chestnut was writing for the white population, trying to educate them to the point where they could understand and have some appreciation for the humanity and dignity of black people. And I think that it's important to realize that during this particular time period, the most common literary image of a black person was Tom from Uncle Tom's Cabin. And then you had along with that these very derogatory advertisements and minstrel shows and various other things that were ingrained in American culture that dehumanized black people. So Chestnut's goal was to reach out to the white population and to bring them on and educate them.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Dante James, filmmaker and instructor at Duke University's Center for Documentary Studies. Gene Gorman is a PhD candidate in English at Boston College. His essay on Charles Chestnut, Awakening a Dormant Appetite, has been accepted for publication in the Southern Literary Journal from UNC Press. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Just ahead, we welcome guitar man Greg Humphreys back to play live in our studio. Stay with us on The State of Things.